Okay, folks, here we are in our final session, which fortunately for all of us will not be, will actually be a little extra short because we'll be done at 4:30. Some of you want to talk about inheritance. I just went through a thing where I rearranged and hid and deleted and switched, and so I'm hoping that what we actually see up here is what I've planned. But as stewards of God's money, should Christian parents leave $1 million estate to be divided between their healthy adult children? Well, anymore, even a modest estate, people who are middle class people, who most people never think of as wealthy, can have estates worth well over $1 million when you take the land and the house, which is almost always by that time when older people die, paid for. You got their investments, you got retirement programs, you've got different, you got all kinds of stuff. And routinely, these things are left to adult children. And one of the interesting things is that it's fairly common for these people to have worked hard their whole lives, and they've accumulated these things, and their assets are worth this much money, and they're leaving it to their two children, one of whom's a lawyer and one of whom's a doctor. And this is, and it's not always that way, but the idea that automatically all things should be passed on to one's grown children. Now, we're not talking about being put in a trust fund if you die when you're young and your kids are still being cared for by somebody else. We put into our will when our kids were small, Ron and Kathy Norquist, because they were going to be taking our kids if something happened to us. And so the bulk of our estate was going to be going over to be managed by them for the care of their family, including our kids, because if you don't trust people enough to manage some assets, you better not be entrusting your children to them. Now, we're not talking about that. What we're talking about now is the more typical scenario where somebody's drafting a will, if they do draft a will, and certainly we should, to designate where the assets are going to go when we die. And should they automatically go to kids? Cornelius Vanderbilt, who knew something about wealth, inherited wealth is as certain a death to ambition as cocaine is to morality. Henry Ford said, "Fortunes tend to self-destruction by destroying those who inherit them." Andrew Carnegie said, "The almighty dollar bequeathed to a child is an almighty curse. No man has the right to handicap his son with such a burden as great wealth. He must face this question squarely. Will my fortune be safe with my boy, and will my boy be safe with my fortune?" Now, right now you're thinking, yeah, but we're only talking about extremely wealthy people. Actually, these same ideas and same principles apply to middle-class people who, upon their deaths, in a day where there tend to be fewer children than there used to be in the past, it was common for people to have 8 or 10 children, and now it's more 2 or 3 children often that these estates end up being left to, becomes the equivalent of adult children receiving an inheritance, or even if they're younger, of their winning the lottery. Well, not the mega, mega, mega lottery, but a sizable lottery that comes into them. So maybe it's $500,000. Maybe it's $1 million. Even if it's $250,000. It's a lot of money. And what does the average person do with that money? They don't need it. They've already been doing stuff. And if there are people who really need it because of the life decisions they've made, they'll just do more damage to themselves with it. It's the gasoline on a fire thing, you know. And if, on the other hand, they are thoughtful, generous, considerate, biblically oriented, Christ-loving people, they probably, not needing it, would give most of it away. Which raises an interesting question. Why don't you do that? Since God entrusted it to you, not to them. They are stewards also. God has entrusted wealth to them. So the question now that you have to evaluate is this, I shouldn't do anything automatically just because this is done. Is there a certain rationale behind this? We'll get into it more and look at some passage of scripture, but Frederick Gates to John D. Rockefeller, your fortune is rolling up like an avalanche. You must distribute it faster than it grows. If you do not, it will crush you and your children and your children's children. Once again, okay, extremely wealthy. So what applies? Well, biblically, we have this statement. A good man leaves an inheritance for his children's children. And this one verse is cited by many people as a definitive statement that we are supposed to pass on our financial assets to our children, our children's children, and in perpetuity, everybody's assets gets passed on to everybody in the family. Well, the thing that we have to realize with this is we have to ask ourselves, when that statement was made, how did society operate? You owned land. You farmed that land, you tended that land, whatever. That land was what kept you from being a slave. Because you had something that you could work yourself. Now, you got to be sure that you pass that on to your children. And that you don't incur the kinds of debts and everything that's going to put them into bondage. And they'll pass it on to their children. And often, I think the point with the children's children is that usually this generation sees their children and the next generation after that. At least that's pretty common. So you see this, you even know your grandchildren. So you want them to have this. You pass it on. Well, what about, because if you didn't do that in the biblical culture, what you would end up doing is having people in bondage, again, because they didn't have this land that they needed to have and to tend to make a living. So it was a very reasonable thing to do, to pass it on to your children and they pass on to their children. Now, the question is, do we live in a different time and a different situation than that? And I think there's an obvious answer to it. The land that you have when you die, do your children now work that land to make an income? They just take the asset and sell it. Or if they live in it, they sell where they live now. Right? And it just becomes cash. It becomes money. It becomes not in most cases, yeah, you can find exceptions to this, but it's not the perpetuation of the family business. In some cases it is, but in most cases it's not. Yeah, there's a friend of mine who owns a lot of nursery land, and he says, you know, my kids don't want to go into nursing. They don't have an interest in that. I got a lot of land. My wife and I die. It's worth a lot of money. What should I do with it? Well, he'd read Money, Possessions, and Eternity. He was thinking, well, maybe you should give it to the kingdom of God. And he said, well, what do you think? And I said, well, yeah, that's what I think you should do. I mean, certainly sit down and talk to your kids about it. Have family conference for it. It doesn't mean that his land isn't his only asset. He could still leave something modest to his children. And certainly you can leave memorabilia and you can leave this or leave that and do what you want. But just automatically assume that all this wealth should go to one's adult children who don't need it. Now, yes, and you can say, yeah, but what if special needs? And what if they, yeah, figure that all out. But you hear broadly what I'm saying here. Because there's other scriptures that warn us about some things. Even in that culture, an inheritance quickly gained at the beginning will not be blessed at the end. Whoever can be trusted with little can also be entrusted with much, and whoever is dishonest with very little will also be dishonest with much. And that suggests that when we are going to put money into people's hands, we should evaluate their ability to handle that money. So if you're dealing with children who, for instance, and I've talked with Christian people whose kids have had histories of drug addiction, and they're saying, well, shouldn't I leave this money to my kids? Well, you're leaving your money to a grown child or a teenage child or whatever, regardless of the age, with an established long-term addiction will simply be to fuel an addiction. Is that really what you want to do? If you leave money to somebody who has proven that they cannot handle money wisely, then what are you doing in passing the money on to them? It would seem you are making an unwise choice and setting them up for judgment. John Chrysostom, AD 390. If you wish to leave much wealth to your children, leave them in God's care. You know, let's not think inheritance, let's think heritage. Do not leave them riches, but virtue and skill. For if they have the confidence of riches, they will not mind anything besides. For they shall have the means of screening the wickedness of their ways in their abundant riches. Now I have a question for you. If your investment manager, let's say you had an investment manager, if he died, what would you think if you found out he left your money to his children? You'd say, something's wrong with this picture. It wasn't his money. What have we been saying about who our money really belongs to? Who is it? It's God's. It's God's money. So we're his investment managers. We're his money managers. So why do we think that when we die, we should automatically give God's money, which he has entrusted to our care and for which he has told us there are all kinds of kingdom priorities that he wants to see accomplished in a world of great need? Why would we assume that it should go to our children, on whom it will likely have very negative impact in large quantities? Again, in smaller quantities, and if they are character-proven, spirit-led people, they might be able to even handle larger quantities. But once again, what's probably the best thing they would do with it? Give it to God's kingdom. Well, then why don't I? Now, I'm obviously presenting a minority perspective here, and with a lot of these things that we've talked about, I don't have to balance this out by giving you the other side. I mean, the other side is what you always get. You know, on so many of these things we're talking about, we know the world's wisdom, we know the church's wisdom, we know what people normally do. But just raising the question, is that necessarily the best thing to do? Once again, I've been at meetings with people. I read a book a while back, and I allude to it in Money, Positions, Eternity, and I don't recall the name of it. And I don't think I got it on the bibliography. I realized afterwards. But it was a book written by a number of people who have inherited wealth. and who talk about the burden of inherited wealth. And that same burden applies even to people in lesser ways who inherit less. Now, I'm not talking about if somebody inherits $20,000, $30,000, $40,000, it may be a lot of money, but it's not going to radically affect their lives, probably. Probably. But when somebody is inheriting very large, much larger amounts of money, then it has that feel of mom and dad dying is like winning the lottery. I got all this stuff. And by the way, you have some people now who are making decisions about the care medically of their parents and withholding certain things of medical care from their parents because too much of their inheritance is disappearing, paying for elderly mom and dad out there. And you have Christians who are struggling with these issues. Once again, these are, I just happen to be somebody that people talk to about these kinds of things. And it's astounding the mentality of ownership that we have about what doesn't belong to us. Our parents' stuff as if it was my inheritance. It's theirs, and actually it's God's, and they're managing it for God. And how did I get into this equation? Just because of the understanding that everything gets passed on. Well, it gets passed on until it meets somebody that's willing to waste it all on themselves. And then there's nothing left to pass on, and was it good for them to spend it all on themselves? So whose money is it? Shouldn't it be up to God to decide whether to make your adult children wealthy? And you know what? Sometimes we're just not helping out. And I've seen it happen in families. I know a family that was headed for the mission field, and the wife received a large inheritance and decided to, and they came in, they met with me, and they said, what do you think we should do with this? You know, we're going to the mission field. We could pay our own way in missions for years to come. We wouldn't even need support from people. We could spend it that way. We could do this. And I said, you know what I would do if I were you? I'd give it away. And the reason I'd give it away, the majority of it, you keep some to do special needs for in your house, hold and all that, and take that as a gift of God. But the reason I give it away is because you need people's support. You need their prayers. You need to, and if this money's going to the kingdom of God, that's a good thing. And who could be, you know, against that and all? Well, the decision was made. We're going to keep this money. She kept the money and considered it hers, which is another problem that sometimes happens in inheritance situation. And you cannot believe what happened to the family, but I will just summarize by saying the family fell apart completely, ended in divorce, horrible accusations. We started with a family going to the mission field, and everything was headed that direction, and then a large amount of money came, and all of a sudden, it was a nightmare. That those lives were a nightmare, and what those children have been through, I didn't even want to think about it. All right, and you say, now it wasn't money that made that happen, it was sin that made that happen. But money becomes a means by which sin is carried out in many cases. And that's why statistically, did you know that the more money a person makes, the greater the chance that they will commit adultery? Why? Well, I think there's some fairly obvious reasons if you think about it. The opportunity, the ability to travel places, to do this, to get special gifts, the attractiveness that they would have to other people. You know, the more you have, well, the more entitlement sometimes comes out of it. Again, the problem is not the money. The problem is what money does to people, especially when it is unearned income. And I think that's one of the huge keys here. That's the parallel with the lottery. Those kids didn't earn that money. In a lottery, you don't earn that money. It just comes to you. And here's a proposal. Children who would resent their parents giving God's money to God's kingdom would not handle that money well. If God entrusted his money to me, doesn't that indicate he wants me to invest most of it where there is too little rather than too much, where it can help rather than potentially do damage? I remember years ago talking to our daughters and their husbands about this. Nancy and I had talked it through, and I just said, hey, I just want to make clear to you that first was saying to my daughters, it's your husband's responsibility to provide for you financially. And I trust that they're going to do that. They're men of integrity. And to be able to say to them, you'll get something. Nancy and I die, you'll get something. But it's not going to be large amounts by the world standards. And the book royalties are certainly going to go on to, you know, God's kingdom. And a fair amount of our assets are going to be going directly into God's kingdom. And we'll probably, you know, have something in there related to grandchildren and helping with education and things like that. But the point is, just want you to know that. Now, as a result of that, how do you feel about that? It was like, fine. It's great. It's your money, and God's entrusted it to you, and yeah, it's great. And I thought, looking at them, they're exactly the kind of people that could have been entrusted with the money, because that's their response. But since that's their response, why would we not then give it as we have opportunity and designate that in, you know, in our wills? And so the conversation was great. And by the way, I've had conversations with people who have told me how they've sat down with their grown kids and they've had these discussions and say, we want to see this go in missions now. We want to see this only. And they've had a few of the kids say, wow, that is just great, terrific. And then there's been a couple of the kids that have said, no way, no way. What do you think those kids probably would end up doing with the money if it came to them? Do you think they'd be kingdom minded? So they work it through together. I had one man tell me the story of sitting down with his sons-in-law. He had daughters. He sits down with his sons-in-law and daughters, and they make the family announcement that the family wealth, and he's a pretty wealthy guy, is not going to go to the kids. I mean, one husband was a lawyer. One husband was an engineer. Some, you know, they got their own family. And they're taking care of their family. And after he made this announcement at dinner, one of the sons-in-law stayed afterwards. Everybody else walked out of the room. He came up and he shook his hand, the hand of this wealthy man. And he said, I've always thought it didn't matter what I provided for your daughter. You would always be her main provider, because she knew that one day she'd be getting a good portion of your wealth. I want to thank you for letting me be the leader of my home and provider for my home. That's a pretty powerful response, and you see a lot. So just some things to consider. A family conference about inheritance, you know, I highly recommend that. This is not a rule. Just consider this. Just consider this as an option. I want to raise the question related to it. Is leaving money the same as giving money? Well, I don't think it quite is the same. You know, I mean, it is appointed for men to die once, but after this, the judgment. I kind of think that giving is like when you have an alternative. When you die, you are going to be giving your money somewhere. It's only a matter of deciding where. So, I certainly encourage people to be very generous to their churches and to Christian ministries in the wills. I would also suggest trying to do, as my friend Ron Blue puts it, do your living while you're given, do your giving while you're living, so what's the rest of it?
So you know where it's going.
So you're knowing where it's going? Yeah. Yeah, and that's good. So you know where it's going, because, and you can designate certainly in your will and in to know somewhat where it's going. I will not take for the Lord what is yours or sacrifice a burnt offering that costs me nothing. And I think so giving is where there is some cost of some sort. Now, I just want to highlight a a few more things as we start moving toward the wrap up here. Raising stewards and givers. Teach them to your children and to their children after them. I have chosen him so that he will direct his children and his household after him to keep the way of the Lord by doing what is right and just. Psalm 78. What we have heard and known, what our fathers have told us, we will not hide them from their children. We will tell the next generation the praiseworthy deeds of the Lord, his power, and the wonders he has done. He decreed statutes and established the law which he commanded our forefathers to teach their children, so the next generation would know them, even the children yet to be born. And they in turn would tell their children. Then they would put their trust in God and would not forget his deeds, but would keep his commands. Learn these truths, pass on these truths. This is the heritage we have to pass on to our children. Bring them up in the training and instruction of the Lord. Hudson Taylor said, "The less I spent on myself and the more I gave to others, the fuller of happiness and blessing did my soul become." This is the blessing that we want to convey to our children and to our grandchildren. We want to teach them self-control, because it's one of the fruit of the Spirit. You got all these references to self-control, live self-controlled lives. Teaching our children, it's normal and healthy not to get whatever you want. In order for things to be special, they have to be the exception, not the rule. There are higher values than immediate gratification. There are better ways to use God's money than to just simply follow our impulses. So search me, O God, and know my heart. Test me, know my anxious thoughts. See if there's any offensive way in me. And Scripture says, if we judged ourselves, we would not come out under judgment. So I think a good spirit to come out of this time, to come out of this two-day class with, is a sense of self-examination, of pondering, of looking at our lives and asking the Lord, what would you have me do differently, Lord? From everyone who has been given much, much will be demanded. And from the one who has been entrusted with much, much more will be asked. And I just would ask the question, who has been entrusted with more than we've been entrusted with? Wow. I mean, it's amazing. God has been so good, so gracious, so kind to us. And to whom much has been given, of him will much be required. And so, given, it will be given to you. Why? So that you can be generous on every occasion. We fix our eyes not on what is seen, but on what is unseen. For what is seen is temporary, but what is unseen is eternal. And I end with two quotes. "I have held many things in my hands," Martin Luther said, "and I have lost them all. But whatever I have placed in God's hands, that I still possess." That has that ring of that treasures in heaven. Move from earth to heaven, doesn't it? The treasures awaiting us once we get there. A.W. Tozer, love the writings of Tozer. I hope you're a Tozer fan. If you're not, I highly recommend his stuff. He said, "Any temporal possession can be turned into everlasting wealth. Whatever is given to Christ is immediately touched with immortality." A great thought. Now, in the last couple of minutes, maybe you have a question. By the way, let me say one other thing. Go back to what I was talking with children and inheritance, something that Nancy and I did. When we made that decision with our kids, we also made another decision. And that is that we wanted to do something for them now as young couples to help them. They both wanted to get into houses and were in a financial position where that would be difficult to do. But to help them with some money they could use for a down payment. The idea being, we're going to help you now with enough money that could be of help to you at a time in your life when you need it. And later on down the line, probably at a time in your life when you really don't need it, that money is going to go to God's kingdom. So it was our way of saying, we want to really help you now. And most people are going to really appreciate the help in the short term that, yeah, it. So if you're worried, are they going to think we don't love them? And then I don't think there's any danger of that. unless they already think you don't love them, in which case there's also no way you're going to convince them you do by how much money you leave them. Closing thoughts or questions? Yeah. Our board has talked about this. For now, our royalties, the royalties from the books, they are a possession of Eternal Perspective Ministries. We're not, our name's on nothing. It doesn't, they don't come to us. And the ministry will be in a position then to give those away as long as they come in. But we are having discussions about what that looks like because, once again, we don't know that the organization is going to continue. So how would that work? Would it come into some situation where Nancy, if I died, would be the one distributing these, or would the board still function in some way? But, yeah, we don't know at this point. Last questions or comments? Yeah. Yeah, I mean, one of the things we did, and I think I put even a little drawing of that in the book. Steve Tucker did that drawing, now that I think about it. Some of you know Steve. But where it was, we had three jars. And it was the giving jar, the saving jar, and the spending jar. And I remember specifically, and I think Nancy does too, getting those jars together, we put these labels on, we put them down with the girls. Were very young at the time.
They each had a set.
They each had a set. And I can't remember, I probably said in the book, were they 7 and 5 or 5, 6 and 4 or 5 and 3? I don't know. Whatever it was. I know they were 2 years apart. That one. You know. And anyway, so they've got these three jars. And so we said, all right, well, how much are you going to put in here? And they get, well, the minimum of the 10% has got, so we actually got to do some math. And so if you have this much, if you have a dollar, then it's 10% of that's a dime. And so the dime goes in the saving. But then say, but now that's the minimum. That's what, you know, really has to go in there. But it's wonderful if you want to put more in there. Great. And so often they put maybe 3 dimes into the giving, and then there's a saving one, and maybe they put 2 dimes into the saving, and then they would have their 5 dimes that they would put in the spending. So they're saving something. I mean, the spending means you don't have to go out and spend it today, but it's there ready to spend at any time that you know you want to. And that was fun because what we taught them was that at any time you want to, you can move something from the right hand, that's my right hand, obviously, the right hand jar, the spending jar, to the saving jar, or to the giving jar. You can even move from the saving jar to the giving jar. But once it's in the giving jar, don't go moving it that direction. And even when it's in the saving jar, don't just move it to spending. You can spend, you know, the point with savings is at some point you may, you spend them, but for maybe a specific thing that you're saving them up for. So anyway, those were the sequences we went through with our kids, among many other things. Another thing is that we would take them, and one of the things that I was going to recommend earlier, and I think I mentioned in the book, is the idea of taking a field trip to the dump. And we were in a couple of situations where we'd point things out, abandoned things, and discarded things, and just it's just very educational. A dump is very educational because it shows you. And I can imagine, I can't wait to take our grandsons to the dump. If the girls like the dump, the girls were a little, you know, weren't quite as sure about the dump. The grandsons love the dump. But anyway, the point is, look at all this stuff. And think of how it was once so prized and valued. You don't even have to go to the dump. You can go to those garage sales and you can, you know, pick up a lot of that. But especially the dump where it's like, wow, these things sure came to an end, didn't they? But people treasured them. People wanted them. People got divorced over stuff like this, for crying out loud. And it's in the dump. It's not going to last. It's like a picture of 2 Peter 3. Another thing I would do with our girls that we did. I remember one time, just me with the girls, we walked around the Fred Meyer Shopping Center, and had a thing where we were quizzing. I said, "Girls, I want you to find things in this store that we need. I want you to find things we need. Okay, but if we don't need it, you know, point out we don't need it. But what are some of the, you know, needs of life?" So it was so funny because we're going through like in the grocery section, and I would say, "Well, you need food, but I don't know if you need like granola bars and 100 kinds of cereal, and if you need this and you need that, but you need food." "Yep, you need food." "Well, bread, that's a good one. Bread's in the Bible." "Okay, you need bread." "And eggs, you know, milk, you need milk." "And well, yeah, you need something to drink, and milk's a good thing to drink." And so but then we get out of the food section and we get over the variety section, and there's like some clothes. "Well, we need clothes." "We don't need these kind of clothes and these kind of clothes and this kind of clothes." And then we get away from there, and now pretty much we get over into an area of the store where we don't need anything here. Now, we want a bunch of things here. Now, I was not teaching them that it's always wrong to get something you want and that you have to vitally need something or you shouldn't buy it. That wasn't the lesson. The lesson was just know the difference. And that there are people all over the world who are just waiting for what they really need. And God has given us this abundant affluence, and this stuff isn't going to make us happy. It's not bad. It's just not what, you know, life is about. Kathy?
Randy, didn't you also include the girls in your giving decisions?
Yes. Thanks for saying that. We used to include the girls. I gave one illustration of that earlier, I think, with the trip to Hawaii thing that we could have paid, and they were in on that decision. And I actually remember one of the most moving things that we ever experienced with our girls was this abortion clinic lawsuit, and it looked like we were going to lose a bunch of stuff. We'd probably lose our home. They maybe wouldn't be able to go to their church school anymore because we wouldn't be able to afford it. And, you know, we didn't know what was going to happen. And the night before, and we always included our girls not to worry them. I mean, we wouldn't tell them everything, but enough information where they could pray. Because God honors the prayers. He loves, I think, to hear the prayers of these kids. And sometimes we hold too many things back from our children. They need to participate in the process and pray about. But anyway, so here we are, and I get a call the night before what was going to be a 30-day court experience, being sued by this abortion clinic for a phenomenal amount of money and no actual damages, just punitive damage type stuff. And I get a call from our attorney, and he says, "Randy, I don't know how to explain this, but they just called and they dropped you from the case. So you're off. But all you have to do is sign something." Yeah, 22 or 20 some other people. And so they're dropping you, but because they dropped you within 24 hours of the court case actually starting, you have to sign something, agreed to. And obviously, as your attorney, I'm telling you, you should. Okay, you'd be crazy if you didn't. Well, I said, "Well, why do you think they dropped me?" And he says, "Well, I'll be real honest with you. I think it's because you're a little more public than some of the people, and you've been in situations where you've kind of been a little bit of media spokesperson and all of that, and I think they think it would be to their advantage, maybe, if you weren't on the case, and let's just hammer the other people and kind of, you know, let you off the hook." And I said, "Okay." So sat down with the family, explained the whole situation, and said, "Well, what do you think?" And I said, "And remember how we emphasized with the girls, now, we don't know what's going to happen here. We may lose this house. We may lose, you may not be able to go continue the school. We don't know if this thing goes on, but we have an opportunity. And that's to, you know, step out of this, but here's why we think they're doing this." And obviously I wouldn't be able to have to do what I could have done otherwise if I, you know, in terms of being on the witness stand and doing other kinds of things. And so our share it with the girls. "Okay, what do you think, girls?" Karina goes, "Well, Dad, I think if the abortion clinic doesn't want you to be on the case, it probably shows God does want you to be on the case. And then our daughter Angela is just like, yeah, yep, yeah, that's right. Sounds right to me. And I remember crying that night, not because now I have to call back the lawyer and say, we're staying on this kid. It wasn't the kid's decision. Nancy and I made the decision, but that was their input. We involved them in that process because I thought, I want them to be part of this, you know?
It affected them
dramatically. And what a wonderful thing. And by the way, they didn't have to quit school. An anonymous donor paid the rest of their way through the church, you know, school. We didn't lose our house, and that was another story. But in any case, the point is, with our kids, let's involve them and trust God to do His work of grace in their hearts and lives. Let's close in prayer. Father, thanks so much for this time. Thanks for this class. Thanks for these good people. And pray, Lord, for Your blessing on each of them, on each of us. Lord, help us to go from this place with just a sense of awe at Your greatness and Your goodness and gratitude for what You have provided for us and how You intend it to be used for Your kingdom purposes. Lord, liberate us. We're not looking for bondage. We've had plenty of that. We want to be liberated and free to give with all of our hearts and invest in kingdom causes and helping the poor, missions, and making a difference for You around the world and raising children and grandchildren and affecting neighbors and friends and our churches in ways that are contagious about the joy of giving and the joy of following You wholeheartedly. And again, Lord, I pray that we'll one day look back in eternity in Your presence in a new earth. Maybe we'll get together for dinner one night and talk about the things that You did in our lives over this time, these couple of days and the time to follow. And pray, Lord, that You'd be honored and pleased in that. We love You and we praise You. In Jesus' name, amen. Thanks for coming.